SquirrelsGrills.com is better than pie.
That's the way I like it. Welcome, everybody, to the Two Blind Squirrels Show. Today, we've got one blind squirrel and one sly fox, I think. We've got a special guest in the studio this evening. Faith will not be with us. And instead, we've got Mr. John Coffey, who will be joining us and sharing some interesting... Let me just start from the beginning. Me and John Coffey go to a... CBS Bible study, community Bible study together, and we have for about a year now, or nine months or so. And the other night, we have a small worship time where we sing songs, and then a little devotional is given, and then we go to our what we call core groups or small groups, where we actually dig into the Word and really give, you know, each and feed off of each other's study that week. And it's very enlightening, and it's very enlightening to see. And it's all different denominations in our little town, so it's a bonding experience, and it also kind of helps see different perspectives. And a lot of times, especially in this town, we tend to get bottlenecked in our own denominations, and so and everybody has their strengths. And so, just like you all know from My Life Ministries, it's a great experience to cross talk between denominations, and we get to do a lot of that. And then after that, we go back and we have a lecture. And I typically record that lecture for anybody who misses CBS, except that when I miss, I don't know who does it. But my printer is acting up. Okay. So the other day, I typically record the lecture, but I don't record the devotional because usually it's just a little 5-minute thing, and it's usually more, sometimes it's even visual, and it's just not something that I ever record, and nobody's ever asked me to. But the other day, Mr. Coffey gave the devotional, and it was right on top of what we've been talking about and what I've been studying about, and I just thought it was very topical, and I thought that you would enjoy hearing it. But before we get there, I thought we would talk a little bit to Mr. Coffey and find out what he's all about, and because what little I know about him is very interesting. So, Mr. Coffey.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. Where were you born? Let's start there.
I was born in Dallas, Texas. Okay. I lived there most of my life. I lived in California for a while when I was a child. I went to college in various places in East Texas. I went to several different colleges that took me away from Dallas. But after I married my wife, Tony, who is from Tulsa, we moved back to Dallas and lived there for about 28 years. And then we moved here to Sulphur Springs. We found it to be a wonderful place to retire to.
So how did you discover it? Were you just looking around for places to go? Or?
Well, in a sense, I was looking for a place out in the country. We lived right in Dallas, and Tony originally is from the country. Mm-hmm. And we both thought it would be really, really nice and pleasant to get out of the city, out of even a small town, out into the deep country. And actually, I went about finding a place very methodically.
Aha.
Because I worked across the street from the Dallas Public Library, and I would routinely go there several days each week for lunch to pick up books and return them and that sort of thing. And since I had access to so much statistical information at the library, I started thinking in terms of what I was looking for in a retirement community. Things like low taxes, homogeneous population, low crime rates, and that sort of thing. And I put together a list of the counties in Northeast Texas and rated them according to my criteria.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Delta County turned out to be number one. I couldn't find a place that Tony liked in Delta County. However, we found one here in Hopkins County that we both liked very much.
If you don't know, Delta County is just a rock's throw from where he's at in Hopkins County.
Yes, that's right.
So it's just north of us, and it's a little bitty sliver of a county.
Now, one of the things that we did not take into consideration when we were looking for a place to retire to
Yes.
were the spiritual aspects of the community. because we were longtime members of another church that we intended to keep going to. And we didn't really expect to get involved in the spiritual life of the community that we retired to. But we did become involved in the community Bible study. Tony, my wife, originally became a member probably 7 or 8 years ago now. And she enjoyed it immensely, and she encouraged me to attend, and eventually I started attending and enjoyed it just about as much as she did. And in the course of developing a better understanding of the spiritual aspects of this community centered in Sulphur Springs, we really appreciate God leading us here, because that is something that we really had not given sufficient thought to. I understand that there are those who have been longtime residents here who think of Sulphur Springs as a light on a hill, and I would certainly agree with that.
Wow.
It is a light on a hill compared to all of the other places I've ever lived.
I, too, have traveled around, and I agree. It is a place I'm proud to raise my daughter in, as far as that's concerned. And there's no shortage of spiritual mentors here.
That's true.
For me, for Faith, and even for Helen.
Now, one of the really wonderful things about Sulphur Springs as a community is that, as you mentioned, it's a great place to raise children, but it's also a great place to send them to school, because we have met and come to know many people who are teachers in the community. We've come to know the superintendent of the school system and a few of the school board members, and they are almost uniformly very devout people.
Yes.
And that religious depth carries through with them from their personal lives into the school system.
I agree. It is a blessed thing that we have in that those people are having at least some influence on the next generation.
Oh, yes.
Even though they're handicapped by the school system itself.
To an extent, but I'm surprised at the extent to which religion can be discussed and acknowledged in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. So far. Mm-hmm. So far. Now, something interesting you told me in one of our, I'm gonna out you here. I don't think you said it in confidence. And one of our meetings was that you used to be an atheist.
Yes, I was raised an atheist.
Raised an atheist. That's interesting. Okay. And so, as you can tell, you have a very methodical mind, as everybody can see, and I think that'll come even more clear when we get into his talk. But so, what led you? Was it part of your mythology that led you to Christianity? How did all that happen?
Well, I had never really given much consideration to religion.
Mm-hmm.
I just assumed it was a superstition, and the people who were involved in it were welcome to it. As far as I was concerned, I had intended to become an astronomer or an astrophysicist, and that was my primary focus of concern. So I was very heavily involved in studying science. My hobbies involved science.
Okay.
I even as a child, I had a fairly elaborate telescope that I would take outside at night and watch the stars and the planets. And at one time, I could, you know, name most of the stars that are visible.
Wow.
And the constellations that they belong to. I was also a baseball fan. And in Dallas, there was at the time a minor league ball team called the Dallas Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
And they played at a field that was fairly close to my house. And I just loved to play baseball, played on the school team. And I suppose a frustrated ball player myself, because I knew I'd never be able to get into it professionally.
Oh.
But I still enjoyed it immensely and followed the home team pretty closely. And the games were broadcast on the radio in the evenings, and in the summer I would usually listen to the ball games while I was reading or studying or doing something else. And one night, I heard a religious program that had come on before the ball game.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently that was the usual programming. And the man who was talking mentioned something that I had never really given any consideration to, because as an atheist, I firmly believe in evolution. And I believe that there just was no evidence for a creation. Mm-hmm. And my simplistic view of religious knowledge, as I had at the time, was that there was no religious theory that would account for the dinosaurs, mm-hmm. or for evolution, or for several other things. And I'd just never given it any thought. But this man on the radio happened to mention the possibility that there may have been multiple creations. That is, that God may have created a world in which the dinosaurs existed, and that world was destroyed, and subsequently he created a world in which Adam and Eve lived.
Uh-huh.
Well, that struck me as interesting, mm-hmm. because it was a completely new idea to me. And
now, what age were you when you were being exposed to this? A teenager, you said?
It's probably about 18, 19, oh, okay. the first time I heard it.
Late teens, okay.
Yeah, and over a period, that planted a seed of doubt about my atheism, I guess, because over the years, as I studied the issues more and more, I came to see that there, even several decades ago, there was already a fairly well-developed creationist science, mm-hmm. with many different explanations for what appeared to be evolution. Like, for example, a theory called punctuated evolution, in which the species continued essentially as they were for a very long time, but at some point there would be according to the theory, was called a unique monster. That is, that the normal sifting and moving of the gene pools would create a new creature that was so different from the parents that it would have to be considered a new species. And that's, I found that sort of thing very interesting. And as time went by, I eventually came to a point where I began to consider whether or not there was in fact a creator. And at the same time that I was going through this process, creation science was becoming more and more refined. If you're familiar with Hugh Ross of Reasons to Believe Ministries, for example, mm-hmm. He was beginning to write at that time. Mm-hmm. And I read some of his books, and they were very influential. And I can't say at what particular point I came to really believe in God, but it's been very helpful to my faith over the years to have a fairly solid grounding in sciences and see how the creation relates to the physical sciences.
To briefly tell my story just for you, because I think everybody else mm-hmm. has heard it, but I was raised here in town as a Baptist and a believer, and when I went to college, I even got a dose of it here in Sulphur Springs with my science teacher in high school. But as I went to college, a sort of opposite thing happened to me, as the simplistic view of creation that I had didn't match up with science, I began to have doubts. Not really that God existed or that I was saved, because I did have a relationship with Him, and there seemed to be things in my life that gave me reason to hold on to that. But everything else fell away. Reasons to believe the Bible, reasons to take anything the Bible said seriously. And so my faith suffered greatly because of that, even though I never doubted my salvation or God in His existence. I certainly doubted His communication skills, and I had a very poor view of God. A deistic view than a theistic view, where He just kind of set things up in the beginning, but is not really involved at this point. Well, anyway, through college, I went through a lot of that, and then it caused. As a result, it caused a lot of things in my life, of course, to fall apart because I didn't have any principles to live my life by. And it was through creation science that my faith was sort of restored, because then all of a sudden pieces started to fall into place as I began to hear about different people. It started off with Ken Ham, but it got deeper into more serious scientists and answersingenesis.org and this kind of thing, really started to lay back the foundations for then believing the Bible and as a reliable historical document, and as maybe even at that point a reliable source of information being passed on from God to me. So and that happened all about the same time I moved back to Silver Springs. It all happened sort of in the same period of a couple of years that me and Faith got married and I moved back to Silver Springs. So it was so it's interesting to hear you coming from the opposite side of laying doubts in your atheism when I was the opposite was causing doubts in my faith.
That really is how it developed. As I'm thinking back on it, I recall reading a book titled The Genesis Flood by Whitcomb and Morris. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember Morris's first name, but he's considered to be the father of modern creationism. And in that book, there is a chapter in which consideration is given to several methods by which you can calculate a radically different age for the Earth. You know, the current belief is that the Earth is anywhere from 4.5 to 6 billion years old.
Right.
But in this chapter in the book, they go through several valid methodologies for calculating the age of the Earth. For example, the amount of meteoric dust that falls to the Earth each year, the amount of salt that's in the sea, the amount of water that's percolated up out of volcanoes every year, and so on. And it may have been that chapter that really was what finally shook my faith in evolution. Because if something as seemingly settled as the age of the Earth is really questionable, mm-hmm. then I had to rethink some of the things that I believed.
Yes, that was a major milestone for me as well, to hear the theories. Of course, I'm coming at it much later than you were, but the theories that were on Answers in Genesis, these were, you know, scientists with lots of letters behind their names, and they were open about where they taught, and you could actually contact them and write them emails and talk to them. And they would write these articles about how, about the dating processes that were being used to come up with the different dating methods for the Earth, and just how they almost all of them, carbon dating, for instance, relies on constants, relies on, you know, things that assumptions of constants that perhaps were not always constant. And it was interesting. And I probably got into it. At some point I had to let some of it go because I was too into the Christian Science and not enough into spirituality or what the Bible, you know, needed to change in my life as far as,
yes,
the spiritual principles of the Bible. And so, but there were a lot of hours spent debating with atheists online, you know, just to see if I could defend what I believed or what I was reading, and it was very interesting. I didn't convince anybody else, but I wasn't trying to. I was only trying to convince myself. Okay, well, let's see what time we got. That's really good. Why don't we wait till it's a great introduction, and I think that we've enjoyed having you today. I think we will start up here tomorrow and get okay. your presentation that you made, and maybe we'll follow that up with a couple of comments. Well, thanks everybody, and thank you, Mr. Coffey, for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Look forward to talking to you again tomorrow.